Broken Vessels by Brandon Bell. Narrated by T.C. Parmalee. Bryant woke to a sharp jolt. He lay and listened. The snow rustled against the window, the fan revolved in the dark above the bed, and the baby cried not. His hand groped at the cold, empty space beside him. Dana was up? He hoped she hadn't tried to drive around the block to put Isaac to sleep. He twisted around, grabbed a handful of blinds, and yanked them down. He couldn't see the space where they'd parked the truck. A dark figure stood in the parking lot, looking up at him. He wiped at fog on the window. No, it was just a snowman. A chill crept into the room and nestled against his exposed leg. He strained to hear as the door creaked with the wind. Bryant clawed the covers from his body and stood. He wavered for a moment, wiping the sleep from his eyes, when he heard the whimpering. He surged from the bedroom and tripped over a body in the hall, knees slamming the metal strip between entry area and carpet, head missing the dining table by a margin that made him wince. He cocked his head as Dana rolled over on her back and shuddered in a coughing fit. In the wan light from the open door, he saw the pale curves of flesh, punctuated by pubis, areola, and eyes exposed by the hair she pawed from her face. She wore her boots. Jesus Christ, had she gone out with only the robe on? "Baby," Dana said, coughing, choking. The sharp aroma of urine filled the air, and his hand slid in the spreading puddle as he crouched on the linoleum. She'd not had a seizure since they'd conceived Isaac, but this was more. She could barely breathe. "The baby," she croaked. His heart beat in staccato, though a silence filled the apartment. Isaac wasn't crying. He nodded, stood, and stumbled through the dark apartment toward the baby's room, knocking over stools in the kitchen and smashing his big toe on the desk. Isaac's room glowed with the green of a nightlight. In the glow, fairy tale animals smiled from the walls, and plastic toys reflected a dull, anticipatory sheen. The cradle lay empty. Bryant froze. He first went for the phone and hit 3 digits as he charged through the apartment. Back in the hall, Dana lay crying.
"He's in the car," she sobbed, an arm pointing toward the door.
"Why is he by himself?" the thought metastasized into dread.
He stumbled to the door and bounded into the frigid night. The cement burned his feet. "Margaretville 911, what is your emergency?" the voice said in his ear. Sprinting from entry area to breezeway, he breathed into the receiver. The metal railing shook as he bolted down the stairs, breath billowing in white puffs as he stepped into the ice and snow at the base. He noticed the lone snowman's absence in the parking lot. "My wife... she's had a seizure," Bryant said through chattering teeth. "Our baby." The SUV idled in a space across the parking lot. Lumpy drifts of snow, like demolished snowmen, surrounded the vehicle, including branches and the occasional hint of carrot and coal. The driver's side door hung open. Bryant sprang across the lot toward the vehicle.
"Sir, what about the baby?" the tinny voice asked.
"My wife," he said yet again, trudging through the fallen snowmen. At the black Explorer, he yanked open the back door and stared at the car seat.
"Sir?"
"Ambulance," he said, and dropped the phone. He reached into the seat and unbuckled his baby. Isaac wore the fluffy green sleeper they'd brought him home in just weeks earlier. It had already begun to get too small for the little guy. He wore a pastel cap with a ball at the pointed end, and beside him nestled the yellow plush ducky Bryant bought the day he was born. The voice from the phone tittered on the ground. Bryant lifted the lifeless body from the car seat and sat down on the lumpy snow to hold his child. He cradled the body and wanted it to be warm. Isaac's eyelids lay open slightly amid his long lashes, but the eyeballs beneath did not move. Bryant rocked himself and hummed a song until his shuddering could not bear the tune. He huddled, sobbing in the cold. After the EMTs loaded Dana onto a stretcher, one of the men stood above Bryant with a hand on his shoulder. Bryant couldn't understand the man's words. He looked up and saw a huddle of snowmen that some of the local kids built at the corner of the apartment building. They built them so the snowmen looked like they were hiding at the corner of the building, watching the scene in the parking lot.
At their center loomed a taller silhouette. Bryant looked at the man above him.
"Help me," he said. Isaac slept in his daddy's arms, but a moment later the body slid into an EMT's grasp, and Bryant felt his grip on the world slip away with his grip on the baby.
The black Cadillac rumbled behind the hearse toward the cemetery. Bryant stared out at the buildings of the town as they passed. People lined the snow-covered sidewalks as though to salute a fallen war hero. He saw their lips wrapped around words like carbon monoxide and baby.
Amid the people, snowmen stood in inventive poses. One waited in an alley looking sideways out to the street with a paper held in its twig hands. Another sat on a bench. Whoever built them made sad-looking snowmen. Bryant and Dana sat silent the short trip to the cemetery. At the grave beneath a darkening sky, the Reverend's eulogy passed through Bryant's mind. Their few close friends and family stood with them at the grave. The wind picked up and grew colder. Bryant put an arm around Dana to keep her warm. She shrugged out of his hold and turned to him, bland or baleful. He couldn't tell which. On the hill huddled another group of the melancholy snowmen, positioned as if to pay their respects. The air smelled of ozone. The storm would arrive before nightfall. When the Reverend concluded, people crunched back to their cars, unspeaking. The Cadillac drove Bryant and Dana back to the apartment to be alone at Dana's insistence. She told her mom she wasn't up to company, she just wanted to be alone. His mother-in-law had relented, but when they arrived back at the apartment, a feast awaited them. It grew cold in their silence.
"Get ready, folks, we're in for a wicked one," the newscaster said with a chuckle. Banter between him and the meteorologist ensued. "Look, if you don't have to get out, stay home. If you do, get in before it gets too late. We're going to see temperatures near 10 degrees tonight, with wind chills dropping to sub-zero."
Bryant pointed the remote at the TV and switched it off. Man or machine would come on next, and he didn't care for it. Dana slept on the couch beside him. She'd not spoken all day. He reached to the side table and poured another measure of Green Label into his tumbler. Before ingesting it, he inhaled fumes wafting from the scotch, scent of malt and oak. "Down the hatch," he said, and sighed once the fire hit his belly.
"Are you going to get drunk?"
He looked sideways at Dana. She propped up on one elbow and scratched at a halo of disheveled hair. A proper Irish lass, his dad had told him when they married. Her hair dyed brown and cut shorter than he liked, he still felt awe when he looked at her, when she spoke, when they touched. Was that over now?
"Maybe," he said.
"Get another glass, then." She sat and looked at him, waiting. Bryant crept into the kitchen. At the sink, he realized there wasn't a reason to be quiet anymore, and he leaned there for a time, face clenched.
"I'm easy when I'm drunk, but I have to drink something to get there," she said from the other room.
A small section of wall separated the living area from the kitchen so she couldn't see him there, crying. Bryant breathed deep and wiped his eyes with the back of his hand.
"Just a sec," he said, but through the window above the sink he saw movement in the parking lot.
He stepped against the counter and leaned toward the window. Pushing to his tiptoes, he pressed his forehead to the cold glass and stared toward the parking lot below. He didn't understand what he saw.
"What the hell?" he muttered.
Snow filled the air with fat, honeybee-sized gobs, and something moved in the parking lot. He opened a cabinet and grabbed another tumbler. Back in the living room, he set the second tumbler on the side table and poured two new glasses. They both threw back their heads, scowled, and slammed the glasses down. He poured a second round and this time picked up his glass and walked to the patio door. He twisted the plastic wand, opening the blinds, and then pushed them back from the door. His hand fogged the glass. Out in the dark, the bundles of snow tumbled. They were more than flakes, flowing down from the sky in sheets and wafting in patterns on the wind. Vortices and doldrums where the snow meandered before it gusted away. This was most visible in the cones of light from the apartment breezeways, though the night was bright beneath the low clouds. The door issued a constant whine from the wind, but when he slid it open, the cold pulling at him, it fell to a whisper. All that snow soaked up the sounds.
"What are you doing?" Dana asked.
Snowmen thronged the parking lot. From the north side of the lot to the south, he leaned over the railing to see, the snowmen dotted the lot in various poses. Dana stood in the door, her expression curdling.
"What the hell?" she said. "How long was I asleep?"
"Not that long," he said.
"How?"
she started to ask.
"Kids," he said.
But the lot crowded with the cold figures reminded him about the huddle of snowmen at the corner as he held Isaac's cold body. He thought of the snowmen in town. An image of the solitary figure in the parking lot mingled with the memory of the one standing amid smaller snowmen by the apartment corner. He turned and herded Dana back in, shutting both door and blinds.
"Weird," he muttered, moving toward the whiskey.
"I'm scared, Bryant," she said.
"Just some stupid kid prank," he said, poured twice, and thrust a glass toward her. She took it, drank, then returned the glass. He poured again.
"No, it's something else," she said.
"What?" In I Don't Care Land with a detour into Happy to Listen, he sunk into the fuzzy feeling and gave her a look that he hoped attentive.
"When it happened, Isaac, I woke up. I thought it was a dream, but I woke up and around the truck were snowmen. There was something else, though. Something dark. A person."
Bryant shivered, picturing the figure looking up at him that night. He handed her glass over and clutched his. Down the hatch.
"Life is very hard, Dad used to tell me," Bryant said.
He wanted to say more, but the words stuck in his craw. He stood and walked to the patio door.
"Come here," he said, staggering a bit.
She stood and padded to his side.
"Look down at a children's prank," he said,
and pushed a handful of blinds to reveal the parking lot, which lay empty. Dana gasped. There came a rasping rapping at the door.
"Christ!" Bryant hissed.
Dana moaned and whined behind him, paralyzed with fright. A snowman stood outside the door, black coal eyes and flat coal mouth, almost traditional in its banality, except that it had a tennis ball for a nose. Its twig hands held a sheet of cardboard with the words, "Please read," written in black marker. Dana held on to Bryant's back and hissed, "Don't touch it, don't touch it," over and over again. Bryant plucked the cardboard from the snowman. It stood inanimate. He reached out and pushed at the tennis ball nose with his index finger, then looked at the other side of the cardboard. "Help us. Come. Follow. If you want to ask question, put back in my hands and look away," it read. Bryant peeked at tennis nose. Black eyes met him.
Or were those merely rocks planted in snow? The smiling mouth unnerved him.
"Why do you smile so?" he sensed deception. "Are you good or evil?" he asked, leaning into the snowman's face.
After a pause, he placed the cardboard in the twig hands and turned his back, pulling Dana with him. As soon as they averted their eyes, the marker squeaked against the cardboard. Bryant turned back to the snowman when the marker stopped. The smile remained, the smile of a long-lost friend, or a salesman.
"Good. There's another little one to save. Too late for your child. Not for someone else's," it read.
Bryant dropped the cardboard.
"Another baby?" he asked, and pulled Dana into his shoulder with a hand over her eyes.
Bryant blinked his eyes rapidly and watched as the head before him drooped and lifted in a stop-motion nod. With the nod returned, he held his index finger up to the snowman and shut the door.
"You're not," Dana said. He strode to the bedroom, then the bathroom, and clawed jeans and a sweater from the closet.
"You can't leave me," Dana said.
"I have to go. Another baby. What if it were Isaac?"
"But it's not Isaac," she screamed.
He stared as her rage bubbled into sobs. She hit him when he hugged her, and then fell silent, wiping her tears. She pushed past him and grabbed her own pair of jeans and sweater.
"You can't come," he said.
"The hell I can't," she said.
He sighed. They stepped from the apartment, still zipping up their jackets and pulling on their gloves.
Dana had a knitted scarf that she tossed around her head, and Bryant pulled his toque on and then tugged his hood over the toque. Tennis Snow stood vigil at the door, but now other snowmen stood in a line at 5-foot intervals leading away. Bryant and Dana trudged into the breezeway and saw the snowmen periodically clutched cardboard signs. "This way," one read. "Please hurry," read another. On the stairs, something rustled behind them, and Bryant turned to see Tennis Snow's and the other snowmen they had passed, standing at the top of the flight, poised to descend. Looking back down, he saw the line of snowmen leading toward the north end of the parking lot and around the corner. Dana already shivered. Her teeth chattered when she spoke. "Can we take the truck?" she asked.
"Don't think so," he said.
"It wouldn't make it in the snow." He reached out and grabbed her hand. "Hurry," one of the signs read. They trudged through the banks of snow. They didn't follow the line of snowmen directly, but kept to the middle of the street where the wind had blown away much of the accumulation. Bryant led Dana north up the parking lot, his extremities racked with the cold before he'd even made the turn toward the exit. He kept on.
"Why are you doing this?" Dana screamed at him.
"Baby," he said, as if that explained everything. Despite their slow pace, he'd already lapsed into his zone. He imagined he could jog forever when he felt like this, buzz and all. Or, at least, until he fell down from the cold. At this rate, he passed a snowman every 3 seconds. He counted time by it. 1, 2, 3, snowman, he giggled.
"You're mad, Bryant," Dana yelled.
"I love you," he yelled back. 1, 2, 3, snowman. The smile on his face felt odd. As they ran, more messages on cardboard flashed by, held in twig hands. "We are free toll of the one city," one read. "We fight a war," another read. "The last war," the next continued. "Our enemy seeks," another began, and the next continued, "to enter a garden of actualized memes. Our leader died." 1, 2, 3, snowman, protecting this garden. He turned left up the service road and ran north again, following the line. Whole clans of Sukhavati have died. 1, 2, 3, snowman, but our enemy has found a way. The snow fell harder as the wind buffeted them. Into this garden. A few more breaths to the next snowman. In the vessel of a child. Another count of steps. Another stone-eyed face affixed with a slight smile. From your world. Bryant stopped and stared at the message, breath coming hard in crystalline puffs. Dana bumped into him and leaned on her knees.
Is this why Isaac is dead?
You've been reading? She asked.
He nodded.
What, he said, what happens if your enemy enters the garden?
He turned from the snowman, an archetypal fellow with coal face and carrot nose, and motioned for Dana to do the same with a twirl of his finger. When she turned, Bryant heard the squeaking of a marker. He turned back when it fell silent. The snowman stood with the placard held toward them. "Mara, our enemy, will enter the child first, then into the garden. In process, the child will be destroyed."
"Is it the person I saw outside the truck?" Dana asked.
"I think I've seen Mara, too," Bryant said.
He shoved the cardboard back into the branches, pulled Dana against him, and closed his eyes. Something hit the snow at their feet, and Bryant felt ice-cold branches press to his forehead. He jerked with shock and then gasped, holding Dana tight. He saw a battlefield covered in bodies. Mara, the dark figure at the center with the baby in arm. A voice whispered in his ear. A sound of frozen bones and blackened flesh hardened to ice. "Through the garden, Mar will create heaven and hell for all the worlds the one city touches, yours included. Mara is not a name. It means murderer."
Bryant stumbled from the voice and found the snowman posed conspiratorially before him. He took Dana's hand and continued on. They followed the line of snowmen across the highway. No traffic headed into Denton at this hour.
"Why do you have faith, Bryant, after what's happened?" Dana asked behind him.
The tears on his cheeks coalesced into a cold sheen on his face. He didn't know how to answer her. He kept running. One of the snowmen perched on a cement divider in the middle of the highway with one branch arm thrown high and wide as if to say, "Come on!" Bryant clambered over the waist-high wall and helped Dana ease over. He chuckled as she rolled over and to the ground. "Shut up, you," she said. He helped her stand.
"Look," he said, turning in place, pointing.
A lull in the snowfall and a downward slope in the geography on the far side of the highway revealed a tableau vivant of snowmen arranged in battle formations. The line of snowmen led them to the epicenter of the frozen battle. As the snowfall increased, Bryant sensed movement out in the darkness. "Let's hurry," Dana said.
"My good Irish lass," he said to her.
They turned and ran hand in hand with the sound of the snowmen following close behind. They trudged across the rest of the highway and the service road, following the line of snowmen across the other service road. They passed regiments of snowmen faced outward to either side, protecting their passage. The clink and clang of steel on steel rang out in the darkness beyond. "They're leading us to the park," Dana said. Ahead, Bryant saw a red light and heard a car revving down in the bottom of the Parkland Valley.
"Someone's crashed," he said, charging forward.
The car engine revved, front wheels spinning free as it lay upside down. A mass of snowmen faced the overturned car on the far side, and behind them stood a dark silhouette on the hill. Bryant stared at the figure in recognition. It was not like the others, more human in form. A black silhouette. It looked down on them. Bryant slipped and skidded to the car. He glanced up at the figure on the hill and saw that it was closer, halfway down the slope. Squads of snowmen had charged around the car to meet the approaching group. Good luck, Bryant thought. He focused on the car and yanked at the door.
Locked, he said to Dana.
The smell of gas filled the air, and Bryant felt panic claw at his heart. He didn't know if cars really exploded or if that was just Hollywood drama. Dana ran around the car, testing the other doors.
All locked, she shouted from the far side of the car.
He glanced across the vehicle to Dana, confirming what he thought she said over the engine with a look at her eyes. Behind her stood the dark form, not quite in arm's reach. The snowman hordes strained in full battle all around, frozen in place when he glanced at them. He kept his eyes wide and stared at the stranger carved of ice and darkness.
"Come here, Dana."
"What?"
she asked and turned around. If she gasped, he didn't hear it, but she stood transfixed while behind him, Bryant heard snowmen creeping, sliding, branch arms bending.
"Dana, come here now," he barked.
She slid around the vehicle and edged to his side.
"What are they doing behind me?" he asked her.
She stood against his shoulder, but faced back, looking along their path. Bryant kept his eyes on the dark figure.
"New ones. I don't see our friends. These have knives, Bryant. They're close and grinning, and the knives are high and ready."
He couldn't look at her, but he heard the panic that must shine in her eyes. Hints of movement echoed from the front and back of the vehicle as snowmen shuffled and struggled in the darkness.
"Climb up on top of the car, Dana. Keep away from the front wheels. Keep your eyes on the bastards."
Bryant crept around the back of the car, locking his sight on the head of the dark figure. As he came to the rear corner, he held the snowman on his left, still in his peripheral vision, gazing out at Mara, the murderer, as he knelt and felt in the snow beneath the trunk that it flung open in the crash. He hoped for a tire iron or a tool set, but came away with a jack. At least it was heavy. Jack in hand, he walked around to stand even with Dana.
"What are we doing, Bryant?" she asked.
"I'm going to bust the window and open the door. When I say, you jump down and climb into the car. Check the driver, get the baby. Then come back to me and we'll see what's what."
"I'm scared, hun. They're closer. And the more I watch, the more I can see them move," she said.
"Me too," he said.
He had blinked, and now Mara stood near enough to reach out and touch. And the more he stared, the more the figure seemed alive. Bryant saw the black ice of its flesh glisten in the gloom, the contours of a face unformed but ready to coalesce. Lips full, eyes dark, cheekbones strong. A smile. He crouched and used the jack to hammer backward against the passenger window. Eyes on the murderer. It took several tries before the glass crumpled into a sheet of shattered chunks.
After that, a couple more blows tore the sheet of glass free, and he felt along the door's edge until he found and pulled down on the lock. He stood, pushed the door wide, and propped it open by standing against it. "Now, hun," he said. Dana planted a hand between his shoulder blades, and he heard her feet hit the ground. She crawled into the car, and a moment later the car went dead. First, the sound of metal scraping and poking at the far side of the car echoed in the night. He shook his head, thinking that she was wasting time, when he heard furtive movement above and behind him. Instinct ruled, and he glanced up to see Tennis Snows, the archetypal one, and several other snowmen atop the car. They were all poised to jump, knives ready. One of them held a cardboard strip toward him. "Look at Mara, not us," it read. Bryant twisted around and slammed the door closed as he tumbled backward. Mara stood over him, face close and twisted, arms raised to stab him with a dagger of ice. He sensed Tennis Nose and crew jump over him and heard them hit the ground behind their enemy. Cupping his hands around his eyes as if watching a horror show, he leaned back against the car, pulled his left knee up, and kicked the figure as hard as he could in the chest. Bryant shouted with effort and then stood over the fallen enemy, breathing hard. The small crew of rescuers looked at Mara with various expressions of surprise and satisfaction. He straddled the figure and pulled the dagger, ice hilt and ice grip, but not of a piece, from Mara's hands, hands that twitched visibly at their empty purchase. Holding the dagger above his head, ready to kill the creature, he looked the murderer full in the face and then closed his eyes. The ice hands latched around his wrists. Bryant kept his eyes shut. Snowmen moved around the two as they struggled. The dagger descended until he held it against Mara's icy chest. "No," it said, the voice like wind, dead leaves, ice cracking. He plunged the blade deep into Mara and held it until those hands fell away and the thrashing ceased. The car revved no more. Dana. He turned and she stood behind him with the baby in her arms. "The mama's dead," she said. It took him a second to understand. The baby's mother. He nodded. He stood but gazed at his feet. "Please help us home." A wooden hand clenched his shoulder for a moment in response. He nodded again. Bryant trudged past Dana and crawled into the car, reached past the girl hanging in the driver's seat, and unlocked the door. While at it, he unbuckled the girl and jerked backward as the body tumbled out of the seat. He backed out of the cab and pulled Dana with him as he walked around the car, opened the door, and lifted the girl's body.
"What are you doing?"
"I'm not leaving her out here," he said. Part of him wanted to toss her over his shoulders for the long walk back, but she deserved better than that, so he adjusted her with a few hefts and then started back along the prior path. Dana followed him, and the snowmen followed them both. The battle continued out there, but the forces protecting them kept the skirmishes at bay and allowed them safe passage. Without a baby to enter the garden, the enemy could not win. Bryant thought he understood that much. He let his tears flow finally as he carried the young mother's body back toward home. He listened to the baby coo and squeak at Dana, and he heard her choked baby talk responses. At some point, they passed from the battle zone. Soon after, the sound of snowmen faded behind them, and when Bryant turned, he saw only Dana's startled, bloodshot eyes as she looked up from the baby and behind her, Tennis Nose, alone. Silence.
Heaven and hell on earth? A garden of memes? What does that mean? Where is it?
He gestured at the frozen landscape. What's so important about this garden? Snot clogged Bryant's throat as tears blinded his eyes. When he looked up, Tennis Nose held his wood hands out to show their emptiness. He doesn't have a marker. Bryant guffawed around his sob and saw the snowman holding his wooden hands together as if in prayer.
"Thank you," Bryant said.
Dana offered her tight-lipped smile to the snowman. Bryant didn't think she could talk yet without crying. While he gazed at Dana, the snowman slipped away into the night. Out of the corner of his eyes, Bryant watched a creature make its way. He didn't know why he could see it move now, but it turned once and gave a sad wave goodbye, and then it was gone. He adjusted the young mother in his arms and looked up the stairs into the light. There were calls to make, explanations to offer, a world to return to, another to leave behind. He thought of his Isaac.
a broken vessel that could not carry Mara into any garden. And there was Dana and him. Broken vessels of a sort, too, though they were able to struggle out of the cold and into the light. Dana and Bryant slouched up the stairs with the living and the dead in their arms. They still had each other, and that might be enough.